Matters, a podcast by the China Institute at the University of Alberta. I'm your host, Jia Wang. My guest today is Sophia Zichenko, a PhD researcher at the University of Alberta. Sophia came to Canada a year ago from war-torn Ukraine. We're so pleased to support her in her final stretch to complete her doctoral studies in Chinese language and literature. Welcome, Sophia, to the China Institute.
Thank you so much. I want to thank everybody that made this journey possible here to Canada. I was welcomed so warmly here, and I wish in the future I will have more opportunities to thank and give back to the Canadian community that was so nice and kind, and I was so touched by welcoming me here. Thank you.
We're so delighted to have you. And also a big congratulations on completing your PhD program. That's a major milestone and quite a few years in the making. So congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's been, yes, more than 6 years. I didn't expect myself for it to be so long, but it was initially meant to be 3 years. But then I realized that 3 years is way too little to complete a PhD, to do all the research, like to gather all the materials. Just going to conferences and gathering some materials took me like 2 years. And then when you start your research, and only 1 year left. And then I went, my scholarship in Hong Kong was over. It was 3 years scholarship. I went to Ukraine back home to continue my writing for like 1.5 years. I continued writing, and then the war started. Yeah, it was quite unexpected. All the plans were disrupted. And then Professor Christopher Lupke was so kind to write me a letter and say that, why don't you apply to Canada? That's an opportunity for you to finish your dissertation in peace. And then thanks to the China Institute help, I was able to make this happen, to come here to Canada. So it's been 6 years, more than 6 years now. There is a term called arrival fallacy, when you strive for something for so long, and then when you finally get it, you feel burnt out and frustrated. So I guess I'm right now a little bit in a position of uncertainty, what to do next and what to do with the thing that I've been striving for so long, plus all this uncertainty because of the war in back home. It's not easy.
Right, but we're all so proud of you for completing this program, and I know there are a lot of challenges along the way, and especially in social sciences, I think the average years to complete a PhD, last I heard, it was like 7 to 8 years, so you did it in 6, so that's actually excellent. And it has been a long journey, as you mentioned. Of course, the war broke out, and you have to go through that and all the challenges. For those of us who don't live in the region, it's hard to imagine. And you have been living in Canada for a year, and so how do you find your experience living in Canada?
I find it different from what I've been through so far, because yes, I've been to the US when I was in the last year of high school. I won a scholarship for a year to study at high school in 11th grade, but at that point I was only 16, turning 17, so my perception of things was completely different, plus the situation in the US was also different back then. Canada, the thing I'm mostly impressed and touched by in Canada is the idea that all people are equal, no matter what, and the respect towards human dignity. No matter where you're from, what is your status, you will always be welcomed and respected in Canada. I think that's a fundamental thing of Canadian society, and that's why people come here and want to live here, want to build their lives here. Because coming from a post-Soviet country background, I'm used to the situations where people's dignity have been undermined. So for me, it's very important, and I cherish this feature of Canadian society very much. And it's actually a country where you can feel respected no matter what, which in post-Soviet countries, usually they judge you by your status, by the amount of money you have.
Right. And as an immigrant myself, I can attest to that. I do feel Canada is a very welcoming society, and also really this community embrace diversity. They don't judge you because you have a different background. And many of us feel like we can be a member of this community and can not only stay and be respected, but also potentially could thrive in this society. So that is one of the wonderful things about Canada. And you have lived here for a while, and you are also very engaged with the Ukrainian community locally.
Well, I haven't had much opportunities to go out because I was always in my room studying. But yes, whenever someone's needing help or whenever someone needs translation, I've helped a few of my friends with translation and writing CVs, recommendation letters, and yes, they were able to find jobs. I went to job fairs, helped them. But so yes, I'm more than happy to help whenever someone needing help.
So you mentioned languages and interpretation. You must have quite a keen interest in languages. You first chose to study Chinese during your undergrad study. So I wonder what sparked your interest in the Chinese language or in languages overall. I know you speak quite a few different languages.
Yes, languages have always been my thing. I'm relatively good at the languages because at school I was good at languages and not everything else like math and physics and chemistry I wasn't very good at. So yeah, language learning process was also always very smooth for me. We started learning English at school since, I don't know, third grade or maybe second grade. And then in high school we had German, we had French. So by then I already knew that I already had some level of German and French, and then I had English already at that point. So since I've been always keen on doing challenges for myself, I chose Chinese because it was the most challenging language.
It's very different.
Yes, it was very different and very challenging. That was what inspired me. So I went for Chinese as a bachelor. Usually students have doubts about what to choose to study at the university, but I knew exactly that I was going to do Chinese, and I only applied for a Chinese program. I didn't apply to anywhere else, and then I got it directly.
And you enjoyed your study?
Oh yes, it was definitely my thing. It was very hard.
And later you moved on to do a master's in sinology. And then you decided to do a PhD and eventually in Chinese language and literature. So after studying the language, and you were thinking of going a little deeper and eventually focused on modern Chinese poetry. So what intrigued you about modern Chinese poets and why their works speak to you, and you want to really study further into their works?
Actually, when I look back at the story, how everything evolved, it was quite unexpected, because I knew that I wanted to do language and then possibly literature, but I didn't know at that point that I was going to do poetry. And the way I made this decision was quite an unusual way. So once I went for a holiday with my mother to Turkey, and there I met a man whom I fell in love with. So I was at the last year of university, and then I decided to move to Turkey. At the same time, I didn't want to leave the stuff that I was doing, that I loved, my Chinese language and literature. So I decided to apply to a master's program in Chinese literature in Turkey, in Ankara, in the capital. But it was challenging because I had to know Turkish. So I had to learn Turkish first. In order to apply to this program, the master's program was only available at the capital, and the professor he didn't know English, and so I had to first communicate with him through my then to be husband, because I am inspired at learning languages, so I learned it relatively quickly, like in 6 months maybe or a year, and then I passed the test to enroll into the master's program. Yeah, so actually it wasn't planned at all. It's interesting how the story of this evolved. And then this Turkish professor asked me what I want to do for the master's. And he insisted that I use my background of Russian and Ukrainian literature and language to do something that's intercultural between Chinese and Russian. And so I started looking what could be the interconnection point between those two cultures. And then I found this very interesting layer of Chinese culture that Chinese poets were very much influenced by the Silver Age of Russian poetry. And they took so many ideas and inspirations from it, and they started writing. It's called like the Silver Age of Chinese poetry, contemporary Chinese poetry. Like the poets that are now living, they took inspiration from Russian poets of the beginning of the 20th century. And I discovered that there was a whole fascinating field of research that I could start looking into, because I knew Chinese and I knew Russian. And I ordered, I asked my friend to bring me a book of contemporary Chinese poets from China. And then when I started looking at them, I just immediately fell in love. And so I decided that that's it, that's what I'm going to be doing. At that point, I was living in Turkey with a Chinese lady with whom I used to read those books together. And she was, even she herself was very intrigued and surprised by the language, because the language was not the ordinary language Chinese people use in their daily lives. She often told me that she doesn't understand, even though it's Chinese, but she says it's just like Chinese, but like foreign language inside the Chinese. And again, this was a challenge for me. And since I like challenges so much, I took this challenge. And then gradually it evolved into what I was doing for my PhD, for the specific poet and specific topic.
So you did your PhD, and in your dissertation you mentioned that you're hoping to explore further about this closeness of the materiality of language in Chinese poetry, and then to that of the language that is very distant, like Russian. So, you know, how do you find the journey is to try to explore the closeness? I'm sure, of course, people always think they're just vastly different, but you managed to find those connections.
Yes, for me it was very fascinating, because I found some connections between languages and periods and poets as distant as Russian and Chinese. And one poet that I'm exploring in my dissertation is contemporary Chinese poet, and the other poet I'm referring to is 1920s to 30s Russian poet. So they seem to be quite different, but at the same time there is a specific philosophy of language that I found on the theoretical and conceptual level that I found very similar. And so for me, it just basically speaks for the universality of art and the trans-culture and translingual nature of art, because real art, I believe, that doesn't have any boundaries, and it's always transgressing and challenging the boundaries of language, of culture, of religion, of nation. So I believe that's very powerful. And I try to explore also the power of word and language in my dissertation, and to prove that language is, it doesn't only stay on the level of language of ideas. It can actually change the reality around us. It has the power to influence the world we live in, and it's actually so powerful and beautiful that it's always been fascinating me. I've always wanted to explore this topic further, but I needed the framework to do so, and I found it in philosophy, in some psychoanalysis, because if I only stayed at the level of literature, it wouldn't be sufficient. I needed something that was multidisciplinary, not only multicultural, but also multidisciplinary, to actually be efficient at that level. Because if language is meant to change the reality that we live in, then the theory or concepts that I needed to use would also need to be transgressing the level of literature or literary theory only. So I chose philosophy, yes, to conceptualize my work, because philosophers often look for the ways that we can shape our reality, change that the way ideas and theories and concepts shape and change our reality.
Fascinating. So, of course, you are so talented and you know so many different languages, and you also traveled very widely and lived in different places. So you see the differences, of course, know the differences of languages, but you can also detect the, you know, there's certain commonality among, I guess, all humans. And despite the different languages, they're speaking and trying to explore some of these sort of commonalities, and also how the languages could potentially change reality and bridging that kind of, you know, from reality to an expression of reality. So do you see in our current world, it's currently not a peaceful place, and people seem to emphasize the differences and sometimes using language to almost exaggerate the differences and maybe describe a reality in a way that somehow it cannot be compromised. Do you see that literature and languages can be a powerful tool to perhaps correct that or you know, lead humans to a better place?
Yes, you summarized it so well. Actually, art is the living proof that what we are doing now in the world is wrong, that we shouldn't be using languages or cultures or religions or nations against us, against the peace and unity of the people, because culture is something that's larger than just separate languages and nations and religions, and it should be used to bridge the differences and to strive towards unity and peace, and not to use this against to create conflicts and that we are seeing right now, unfortunately. It's very tragic. So that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, actually, because I want to prove in a way that it's possible that art is the way to save our reality from the downfall. And yes, I believe that that what we are doing is can help. It can actually help save the reality and our world from the wars, because we usually use history as the reason to start wars and conflicts. But actually, if we studied our history better, we wouldn't have this many conflicts, because if we were more conscious about our history and about our culture, and if we spent all the time that we spent in conflicts, if we spend it rather on creating something meaningful, just like poets do or writers do, that use the words to shape and change our reality for better, then perhaps the world would be a much better place.
So well said. And it has been a fascinating discussion. Thank you so much, Sophia, for being our guest today.
Thank you so much.